Hello, and welcome to episode 326 of Muse on Minis.
Musing and amusing.
I'm Nigel. I play Kador.
I'm Brent. I play Signar.
I'm Seabass, and I play Trolls.
Boo.
Yay, Trolls!
Yay. Only until Crix gets their new theme for us with the Jax?
I don't actually think that's that big of a hit to Trolls, actually.
Just a side note, I guess I can talk a little bit about that. Chad has kind of come out a soft retirement. At first I thought he played that tournament 2 weeks ago, and I thought he was going to literally just go right back into retirement. But CID has helped him, and no one's excited about playing against his CID crap anymore.
So is he, like, super excited about being able to actually put Borka 2 on the table, and it means something?
He was, but for him it's mostly about Madrak, I think Madrak 1? I think it's Madrak 1. Madrak 1 CID, and then all the champions, and then they get Sanguine Bond. And he played into Crix, and I don't know if he played into Dark Host, but he played into something like Dark Host, and he wrecked it. Like, unbelievably wrecked it. Like, yeah. I was not expecting him, you know, he played against Dave, who's a pretty good Crix player. Not as beardy.
Yeah, sure.
Not as beardy or competitive as he could be, but he likes to usually make pretty... I mean, he'll definitely play a list designed to beat you. He's got no qualms with that. And, yeah, he played, I think, Dark Host into the Madrak All Champions. And the Sanguine Bond Champions... What is Madrak's feat? It heals everybody?
It heals everybody, and they cannot... Yep, it heals everybody D3 plus 3. Warrior models, D3 plus 3. I'll double check that, but I'm pretty sure it's just warrior models. And yeah, models in his control range cannot be the target of a slam or charge.
Okay. But yeah, he was saying that he healed something like 40-something hit points on his feet turn.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, it basically just crushed the Crix player's soul.
Oh, yeah, because if you're playing, like... Because if you're playing in Band of Heroes, all of those champions are going to get 2 attacks. Every attack is going to RFP. You need 3s to hit or 4s to hit. And then you auto-kill because there's no way you can fail the damage roll.
Well, Dave was saying his big problem with it wasn't even the hit points and the armor, which is what he thought was going to be. He thought that the point of it was that it was going to be hit points and armor. And then what ended up being the problem was that they're Def 16. And then he was, like, really frustrated. He's like, I even lowered their defense by 4, and I was still missing constantly. And, yeah, he was and then when he did hit, it was unreliable damage because they're Sanguine Bonding. So by the time you filter out all the hits that Crix normally gets, and then you Sanguine Bond the damage around, and then you heal it all, it's like, oops.
And I think the take-home here is that Chad is maybe back to playing Trolls regularly.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know.
I mean, the list is called like Return to Meat Mountain, and it's not going to be good.
It's got his D3 plus 3 from friendly faction. Not warrior.
Oh, it's just friendly faction models. Okay.
All your beasts, your battle engine that's in unkillable to begin with.
Yeah, like, it's pretty crazy. Surefoot being control area. With champs is just crazy because once champs get there, they're Def 16 and they can't be knocked down. They can't be knocked down because they had the defensive line ability anyway, but they can't get knocked down on the approach, which means like if someone deals like 12 or 13 damage off a crazy dice spike to one of them, then you can just be like, okay, yep, I'm not going to scoot that damage around. So just this guy will take it. And oh my goodness, look at that. He made his tough check. That's the most miserable tough check you're ever going to experience.
Mm. Second one that guy makes is the worst.
Okay, that's true. But I was testing the list like that with double champs long riders. Because I actually like the mobility I like having the mobility piece of the long riders. And in CID, long riders are arm 20 after the stone. They go up to arm 18 and they go to 2-inch melee range on their weapon. And then Horthol changes to give them crusher instead of linebreaker. So there's some additional damage output available to Long Rider. So I was playtesting it with that. But I think either way you go, it's going to be really good. Like, Madrak 1 is back. Meat Mountain is back.
Yeah, Chad's premise is that he wants, like, 10 extra shield guards so that your option to take them off with shooting is pretty much done. And then they're sanguine bonding the big hits when they get into melee. And then, yeah, they just chew you down.
Yeah, Chad will end up playing it with, like, a unit of warders and band of heroes. I'm willing to bet he'll end up playing it with, like, a unit of warders and the band of heroes theme. I'll be playing it with a unit of long riders in the Northkin theme. And they're both exceptionally good. I couldn't even begin. This is, of course, assuming everything in CID ends the way its last genesis was in the CID process. But I can't tell you which one's better. I don't know that one of them is better than the other, honestly. They're both extremely good.
No, I think all that takes down.
I think the best possible solution is just to watch Pagani come out and say, look, we reviewed it. After consideration, trolls are fine. Learn to play.
That would be the best situation. I mean,
but you know what, though? I think that's awesome. If my time on the podcast is limited to the amount of time that it takes for Chad to to finally emerge as the phoenix that I know he is and rise from the ashes.
No, no, we could have two troll players because the second to John suffering pirate jokes is Josh suffering troll stories. And so if we had two troll players.
Your content without trolls is 20 minutes. Your pre-ramble of just Scott and Chad talking about trolls, you ran out of room on the tape. It's like 5 hours of just pre-ramble, 20 minutes of actual content for people who care.
Well, see, I thought like I would get a chance to like actually like stop and talk to Chad a little bit and kind of like, because this sounds really weird, but in some ways I was kind of hoping to like be the guy to like re-usher him back to trolls, you know, to be like the guy that's like, thank you for returning. Here is your axe. Here is your shield. What is thy bidding, my liege? Right? Like,
you,
to be the guy that kind of hands over the reins to say, okay, man, this is where we're at. Like, you tell me. And to kind of like, and I kind of wanted to have like that conversation about like, well, this is what I'm playing and this is what I think is really good. And like, but we just didn't have time because everything was just busy and there were games. And I mean, it was a
turn. We started it. You could have gone to breakfast with us when we all went and discussed stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. You're telling Scott that or me?
Yes.
Yes. Frick is Scott.
If the shoe fits.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize, a little side note, that Shirley likes to start his events a little late, or he's pretty loosey-goosey with the start time. Like, we would have just went straight to the biscuit place. We were all starving, all three of us in the car. We're like, we're going to try to get there early enough to go get biscuits. And then we got there, you know, right at 10. And then we were like, the place didn't even look like it was open again. So we're like, but then Shirley was in there just like basically by himself and then like one other dude. And then we sat there for whatever half hour and you guys rolled in.
So the take home here is 2 weeks ago, 2.5 of us went to a tournament in Kansas City. plus Chad. And we had an appearance.
It was actually like Colin. A strange. We had a bunch of Asterix players. You had Chad coming. It's like soft returning out of retirement, and you had Colin just there to play 3DS and Kibitz. And then like it was such a bizarre. Yeah, and then you had Scott Taylor just strolling in like that cool a whole round late.
Well, like I mean, yes, that happened, but there I had a very valid reason for being late. I didn't want to leave my wife with.
Yeah, yeah.
With a vehicle that was less than reliable on the day. So I had to make sure she got done what she needed to do before I could go.
Mm-hmm.
But it was so important to me that I make it that I decided to go ahead and go up to a tournament that I knew I was going to miss round one in anyway.
Mm-hmm. That did deflate. What's that?
He also knew he was probably going to get a bye because of it and he could start the day off with a win. It was a very well reasoned calculation.
Yeah.
Oh,
and they've started to, they made a new rule.
Doesn't happen in Brandon Shirley events.
Just for Scott, they made a new rule that the bye is a loss. That's what they're, I don't know if they stuck to that.
So going into the event, we had, Nigel bringing his Harkovic Marauder spam list, which is thoroughly original and everyone should play.
Mm-hmm.
Scott, hey, just an aside, wrong bag.
An addendum to that, it is technically original because everybody you ask is like, take out one Marauder and then put in Juggernauts and Kodiaks, or slash, why not use Karchev, or why not use Vlad 1? Like, everybody loves to tell you what they do. And weirdly, the original one is the Harkovich.
And then I brought the exact same Haley 2 list I've been playing forever, and a random siege list in case I drew Grimkin or Krix.
Or Trolls.
To be fair, I didn't necessarily pack the wrong bag. Mm. I had the wrong list in my bag because I had one of the correct lists in my bag. So I like every time like I ever go to play War Machine, like I always have Doomshaper 3 with me because that's just like it's my list. Like that's my list. Like that's the thing I do. So like I always have Doomshaper 3 with me. But I was playing some friendly games with some. I was just like playing some like goof off games with some friends, and so I packed this like really weird Horgul 2 list that had like all kinds of like elemental lights and stuff in it. And it's not a good list under any stretch of the imagination. But I ended up packing it and playing it because I had left it. I just didn't think about it. So when I finally got on the road and got things going, I got there and then realized I had the wrong list in my bag, which was sad.
But you still had your Doomshaper 3 list, right?
Yeah, I still had Doomy 3. So.
Okay.
And so the local event here is a qualifier for a statewide Masters end of year circuit. It's not lighthearted, but it's a much lighter tournament format than a lot of people are worried about when they hear, oh, we went to such and such tournament. Brandon Shirley runs the events. It's called the Casey Masters, and he runs them Omaha and Des Moines down to Arkansas. So he's a little loose with the definition of Casey, but it's usually first place gets a prize. And they do best painted gets a prize that you can win once per cycle. Cycles run from recruits to recruits, and then everything else is random door prize drawings. So usually people walk away fairly happy with the overall turnout for the event. And if the top person's already qualified, it drops down. He runs a mix of team events and solo events. So if you really want to qualify for the KC Masters finals at recruits, you usually just have to show up enough times and things will work out. They're really good. It's a really good local tournament scene that, and Brandon really puts a lot into it.
Yeah.
We also use it as a good excuse to get a solid group of players together to practice tournament lists and tournament pairings. And I tend to bring one list I'm trying out plus Haley 2 because, you know, that leg's not going to work. I need that crutch to lean on. So,
Well, it was a good event. Yeah, all the KC Masters events are almost always good events. Like, Brandon, you're absolutely right. Brandon puts a lot of effort and energy into it. But it's really good and it pays off because, like, all of his events typically have, like, a lot of door prizes. The stores that he works with are really generous. So, like, it's really cool to, like, go in. Like, there's best painted. There's, you know, placement prizes. There's all kinds of stuff.
Random prizes.
He gives away, like, a lot of random door
prizes. I will say this, because I do have a bone to pick with old Shirley, is that I asked him ahead of the tournament if Chad could play CID Trolls, and he said no. And then when we got there, who was he letting play CID Signar?
There is a slight difference there. You realize that, right?
I don't know. Technically, I'm right, and I think that is the best kind of right.
No, actually, it wasn't CID Signar.
Wait, what?
The 2 nerf didn't go through CID.
Yeah, So there was no CID.
Technically,
I just made up Texas bunkhouse rules.
No, that's the Haley Two Nerf never went through CID. It was in the announced errata that went live today.
Yeah, today.
Yeah, yeah, but it wasn't in CID.
Hmm. Well, old witch was she was in CID, but she's technically in War Room, and I couldn't play her.
She's not released yet. That's a separate.
Oh, jeez. Neither was your Haley 2 rules.
Yeah, but it wasn't CID. Yeah. So we're splitting hair.
Only hurt Brent. They didn't help Brent. So I'm perfectly on board with this.
I also – so since the Haley nerf was announced, I'm now at 22 games with her, I think, 23. And I've asked my opponents in tournaments if they care. To date, it's helped me 3 times out of 22 games, one of which was in a tournament. And to be honest, 2 more inches of positioning and it would have ended up the exact same way.
Mm.
But that was against Carl Jones in the finals where it helped me, where I was able to feet and back up instead of just feeding and moving forward 2 inches. But
excuse me.
The general consensus has been, she's worse off. And there's not a whole lot of point in practicing for what's going to be nerfed into the ground in, it turns out, 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a good turnout. And unless you strongly feel you need to go through our play-by-play on this, I'd like to segue from this into a slightly different topic.
Take us there.
Touching on using local events as practice, typically it is something Scott had mentioned about wanting to discuss practicing for larger events, and I tend to use local cons as practice for whatever the next major event I'm going to is. Make sure I'm playing the same format, the same list pair. In fact, lately I've been trying to stagger my lists for what I expect to see, as opposed to what's in my local meta. The difference there being that I'm less worried about I'm running less lists designed just specifically for 10K or heavies that everyone seems to run, and more of, well, I hopefully I can make do with this variation. That hit a lot more when I was playing Legion, for instance.
Mm.
Also from that, try to use it as practice on things like timing and getting your practice and your reps with your lists down, because outside of a few metas I'm aware of, most people don't practice on a clock. And I'm fairly confident in saying that if you try to put a clock out on your local game night without asking your opponent, they would be rather surprised. Seems fair. I know that everybody kind of slips when you're going a long time between events, and you kind of slip on clock management and time management when you don't have that extra practice element. And that's something I really need to start incorporating in my local game store practice, is that addition of the clock to make sure. I noticed that I was burning a lot more time than I should have been. And in Scott's case, because I'm going to pick on him, Scott, you were mentioning about trying to practice time turns for your upcoming big event.
The LCQ.
The LCQ at War Machine Weekend in 1.5 months.
Yeah, I think, Nigel, you're playing in it too, right?
Nigel,
that's my intention, yeah. The LCQ is wacky because it's like, it's so huge, and like, it's more of an endurance contest than it is an actual like competitive contest. It's like weird.
Yeah, it's huge.
And that is something too, that time turns do change dramatically from Death Clock and what you can and can't do.
Mm-hmm.
Half of it is just reps with the lists. I mean, you just need to practice and play faster, basically.
Yep.
But the other half is really, at least in my experience, it shifts the type of armies you run. By and large, you're probably not running large very large model count armies. Yeah. The exception being very large melee focused armies that don't care if they attack.
Yeah.
Terminus, for instance, going through the mini model still takes Axis in Mark II, his theme, and the generic theme for everybody in Convergence with, I'm going to bring back 12 guys a turn and just make three attacks because I'm using CMA.
Yep.
Scott, you're actually using a prime example of a list I would run in time turns with Doomy 3 and I think 15 active models.
Yeah, about that. Yeah.
Because by and large, many of your activations consist of I spend a fury and run, or I and then you and I was discussing this with Scott. You're running Doomy 3, Max Creelstone, a light, and five heavies, and then scattered solos.
Yeah, yeah, it's two Northkin Shamans, one selection of Whelps, Max Creelstone plus the Stone Scribe Elder, Doomshaper 3, Scrollbearer, and then it's Mauler, Earthborn, Mulg, Axer, as of right now. There's another list that I've been kind of tinkering with, and I have to decide which one I want to go with. And the other list is just Mauler. And then an Axer. So I don't know if I want to go with like five Maulers or four Maulers and an Earthborn, or if I just want to like take a step back and go with Mo. I still need to test it. I'm really, really happy with both lists, actually. But either way you go, it'll be some amalgamation of that, four or five heavies. I don't know which.
So I would start thinking backwards in terms of – so Creelstone should be 15 seconds or less. Activate, give them the run order, pick whatever your buff you're getting, run 10 models, seven models.
Yep.
At least your Axer and probably one of your Maulers is probably Advance and Force for its Animus. So that should be no more than no more than 30 seconds. So then you're looking at what are your active models taking in terms of activations. That's one of those things where just knowing your numbers helps, knowing what your mat is without looking anything up, knowing what your rat is, or your P plus S plus buffs is, and not having to spend any time looking for that. Because when you start having to put out proxy bases, you're just eating into that precious clock on that. But I would definitely look at if you've got three active models plus your caster, you're probably not going to have more than about, I'd say a minute to 2 minutes to plan your turn. And you're going to have to really focus on adjusting your plan to what didn't die when you sent things in on it and decide whether you have to just go to the next model. Particularly in time turns, you're going to have to focus real hard, I think, on deciding very quickly what you're going to do and accepting very quickly the consequences of it not working out and whether you need to change your plan or whether you need to just watch that Mauler get beat on for a turn. If that makes sense.
Well, I think for me – no, it does make sense. And I think for me, like one of the things – one of the things that I have noticed is since I started playing on time turns a little bit is that my analysis paralysis is starting to go away a little bit because you just don't have time to do it, right? You just don't have time to sit there and stare at the board and be like, what do I do? Like, you can't do that. So instead, what I've been doing is looking at the board going, well, this looks good, so I'm going to go do it. And one of the weird things I found is that, like, I found myself, like I don't know, like, I'm using the Force a lot more or whatever. Like, I'm just, like, I'm learning to trust my gut, which is really good because I have, like, six of them. And so like, it's stopping me from second guessing myself sometimes because I just don't have time to second guess. So that's been like an interesting little side effect that I didn't necessarily see happen. I was thinking about some of the games I played recently, and I'm like, yeah, I can kind of see that, you know, like I was actually really good. And so I kind of like kind of working myself through like exactly what that looks like and how to manage the clock on that. I've also been kind of thinking about like kind of what the bell curve of time use is. And it's really kind of weird because in time terms, you don't really have a bell curve of time usage, right? You just have like every turn is 10 minutes. Like, yippee, every turn is 10 minutes. So if I want to take 10 minutes on turn one and I know it's going to take me like 5 minutes to run all my dudes, then I have 5 minutes to sit there and think about what my overall plan is and what gets me the most equity in the win. And then after that, once I've kind of like set up like what that plan looks like, there's no more time to sit there and think about that. It is time to start the motor and clutch goes up, gas goes down when that light hits green. So like it's kind of interesting to kind of look at that in terms of like how that's changed, like how I'm playing a typical game. And I think it's done good things, and I also think it's done bad things to me. The good things are like I was talking earlier about just like identifying a plan and being, all right, that's it. Screw it. We're going with it. Deuces, mic drop, I'm out. And then the other side of that is looking at my game plan going, well, you made a lot of not optimal plays. Like really not optimal plays. Like you made some really big mistakes. Like with Grim 2, like I repositioned one of my war wagons after he went in and like squeegeed the world. And so I was repositioning him. And when I repositioned him, like I didn't change his facing. I just moved the model because I was thinking like, oh yeah, his facing's this way. I'm super sweet. No, like I didn't change his facing because I just wasn't thinking about it. And unfortunately, like I left him without the ability to charge like a whole bunch of models that come to find out like he really needed to charge. So I have to watch like fundamental things like that. Because I feel like the more I'm trying to get myself like operating on a timer instead of just death clock, but just an actual timer, like the more I keep trying to do that, the more I can see myself letting things like that slide. And then also some of my rules interactions were a little, they were a little loose. Like they were like I would check a rule or something and I'd be like, no, it works like this. Right. And so like, I would tell myself that. Because like I'm just interested in getting through the game quickly. I was playing against a guy playing Crix. And I was like, no, that's how it works. I know that's how it works. So I'll just go ahead and do this. Well, come to find out that is in fact not how that rule works. It was Ghost Shot versus Eyeless Sight. I had in my head Eyeless Sight. I was looking at Ghost Shot. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's not in fact how that works. So it almost cost me the game because I was just like, okay, I'm in a hurry. Like I'm in a hurry and I don't know why. I better just get this done. Like, bam, 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 knock it out. And then it almost got me killed because I completely overlooked, like, some critical interactions. So it's this weird, like, it's so hard to describe, but it's this weird thing where, like, you're trying to maintain a tempo. And you know every time you have to stop, like, not only are you wasting time on your clock, but you're also throwing out the tempo that you've built up. And so you're just kind of like struggling to get that tempo going again, going into the next turn. Cause you know that, you know, you have 10 minutes to make it right. And if you can't make it right in 10 minutes, you lose. Mm-hmm. So like it's been this kind of this weird, like genesis of play style.
And that's what I grew into the game playing on. So it's been really strange to hear it from the perspective of someone who started on Death Clock. I know at one point Keith was actually talking about he practiced with a timer and Death Clock at the same time, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
To make sure you're keeping your turns tight. And
time turns have a few advantages. Like, for example, it's not complicated to just pause when people are taking tough checks or marking their damage.
So that's what I was looking up to confirm that it was still in the rules.
Oh, yeah. It's nice that you can pause when those things are taken on your time because they're, you know, in a death clock, generally speaking, it's kind of a pain in the butt because you're passing the time back to them and there's something sort of unfriendly about it. And so there's a little bit of a social contract in which people kind of get loose with it. And then you'll end up, generally speaking, when you death clock, you'll always grouse about like, oh God, I just, you know, and then like with the time turns, if you're not pausing it, that's just your fault. You just pause it when they're doing stuff. And then the problem with the pausing is that you have to really pay attention that you've unpaused it, because you can definitely have some bad things happen. Because like most of those timers are just stupid and cheap, and they you feel like you pressed the button but then didn't, and then you know you get like an extra minute or two, and then your opponent doesn't appreciate it.
So I wonder what the rules are if like I bring my own timer, like I go out and get like a really nice stopper, like a stopwatch or a stop timer. I wonder what the rules are if I use it.
I think as long as it's clear what's going on, most people wouldn't object. I mean, I can't imagine any rational person. I've seen people use their cell phones instead of the actual little timer because they trust their cell phone more. Again, the little white timers with the buttons are cool. They're cheap and they're handy, but like they just don't always work. Their batteries are constantly dying. Their buttons don't always register or press. I've had a game where a judge was doing it. So the judge was holding both of our timers, and he was, like, pausing, and then he just, like, didn't unpause it. And then my opponent, the game was not going well for him. He kind of looked over, and he just noticed that the time wasn't ticking down, and so we didn't know how much time had passed. You know, like, we had no way of knowing. And it created a pretty crappy situation where we had to guess. You know, for him, it felt like I'd been playing for 40 minutes. And for me, obviously, I felt like I had only been playing for 30 seconds. And so, you know, there's a somewhere in between is probably the correct answer, but we just don't know.
And yeah, just that's something seriously, though, that you have to get used to is the fact that you can pause.
Yeah. And take advantage of it. Just wholly take advantage of it. It's not a bad thing. And it will help you quite a lot. It'll help you a lot, a lot, a lot. The other thing is so time turns were always stressful enough for me. I never got into hardcore. I thought that. But it's interesting because when I played at the LCQ 2 years ago, I found that hardcore lists were essentially like people had gotten so unbelievably bad at time turn games that their heads exploded, and that it was basically like the new hardcore. And if you just played a hardcore list, you could just print money. Like, so many good lists were just these like you know, COC, just hard knocking, like tough things to get rid of, beast spam, jack spam, heavy dude spam, and then they would just occupy the middle of the table and force you to kind of have to deconstruct it. And, like, good lists that normally could do it in a regular situation all of a sudden can't, because they can't, you know, they can't just full meal deal you because they just run out of time. They're, you know, like a Crix player who's like, I'm making, you know, Scarfeeded, and she's going in there with all the weapon masters. Yay! Oh, beep, 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 you know, halfway through his, you know, blazing attacks, whatever.
So is it going to be commonplace? I was talking to Brent a little bit about this. Is it going to be commonplace to see players burn their clock out? There's been a couple turns, like I have been into it and just been like, all right, Fen Blades, go, 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 you know, or whatever the case may be. And War Wagons, actually, like, go Death Squeegee. And I'll send it in and like I'll squeegee off like a bunch of stuff. And the next thing I know, it's like, beep, beep, beep. I'm like, oh, I'm not even done with my charge yet. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Well, I would say yes, but with a corollary, Scott, you see that all the time with Death Clock. Literally, you see people spend 5 minutes making an attack that completely doesn't matter when all they have to do is pass the clock and clock their opponent.
Mm-hmm. That is correct. The other thing is if you are having a hard time getting your turns in, it's usually not. This is the other problem with time turns that people kind of tend to not do, is they need to construct their turn in a way that a lot of people, what they do is they make all their non-essential attacks first in a death clock situation. So they'll make all the non-essential stuff that they don't care about first because they kind of want to see how the table's developing and they can take advantage of any of those. Like if they get a plus EV situation where they like killed more than they thought they would, or they did more damage than they thought they would, then they're going to change their plan a little bit, or it's going to allow them to position their caster in a safer place or whatever. You should just put your caster somewhere first, and then put your guys that are protecting your caster next, and then start doing, you know, don't plan a turn. Like, I just plan my turn so differently. Like, I don't want to win the game every turn. I just need to advance the game another turn, like, without losing. And so I take the attacks that are, like, the lowest hanging fruit attacks that don't expose me to too much, and then just do it quickly and move on. And generally speaking, your opponent will, like, you know, you put the onus on them to play clean, like, to make smart attacks in a very short time frame, and oftentimes they can't. And so even if you short yourself, so you move your caster first, you move your guys in front, you form your cloud wall, whatever you're going to do, and then you start taking your attacks and you run out of time, you'll find that that doesn't matter. You'll be like, oh, whatever. You know, like, they'll easily choke coming back at you. And when they choke, it's probably going to leave a caster, like, within charge range of a juggernaut who's just, you know, staring at them because they were, like, in mid playing in the sprinkler doing something fun.
Yeah, the worst thing you want to do is activate, have that timer go off right before you activate your caster and realize you have to burn your extension just to get your caster to safety, and he's your last model.
Yep, stuff like that. Yeah, it's brutal.
So, and I think I've kind of seen myself doing that a little bit now anyway, because, like, something I found myself doing was I would activate, like, I would set up my turn, the turn prior, like, I do all my positioning, you know, and to the best of my ability. But what I would find myself doing is I would be like, well, I'm not going to put this unit here. And typically I would put this unit here so that way I have a screen in front of the war wagon. But if something happens and I can't get that unit unengaged quickly, I don't want the war wagon being stuck. So I'm just going to let them have their charges at the war wagon and hope they don't kill it, or play the odds that they're not going to kill it. Like, I'm not putting a war wagon, like, right in front of their entire army. But if I stick one out on a flank and I'm like, you know what, I don't really want to take the chance of getting bogged down and then not being able to get him to go and do the work he needs to do. So I'm just not going to put this unit, like, fully in front of him. I'm going to put the unit, like, off to the side. And if he comes in and kills the war wagon, then I'm going to pick up whatever he killed the war wagon with. But assuming he doesn't kill the war wagon, then I get to do the things I want to do anyway. And I don't have to worry about this weird positioning game. I don't know if that's necessarily good or bad, but it's definitely different, because when you're talking about, like, changing the way you play, most of the time with Doomshaper 3, he's almost always the last model who activates, except on the turn where I need to use a scroll, except on the turn where I'm going to use the scroll that gives us Animi for free. And then in the other end of that, in Grim 2, he's almost always the first model or the first unit who activates. And so what I found myself doing was kind of changing that up a little bit to where Doomshaper 3 could activate first every round, because his activations are typically very quick and easy. Like, it's either cast implacability, if yes, equals cast, if no, equals move on. Use scroll, if yes, scroll, if no, move on. Like, it's almost like there's a flow chart to Doomshaper 3. And then at the end of the flow chart is it turn 2? Yes. Feet? Yes. No. Like, and so you can almost, like, go through this little flow chart and you can figure out Doomshaper 3's activation in, like, 30 seconds. Like, it's really fast. And so, like, what I've been trying to do is get it to where I'll activate him first. That way I know where all my beasts can go. And I know, like, you know, based on his control area, like, I know where I can send my beasts. I know what I can do with them. And then with Grim 2, I found myself, like, wanting to try and identify early if it's really the right time to feat with him. And then if it is, he has to go first. And if it's not, then because he's typically one of the more complex activations in that army, I've been kind of pushing him for, like, the middle of the road. So, like, after I've got my positioning down to where I don't lose on scenario, then I'm typically, like, I'm not going to lose on scenario or I'm not going to die. Then I'm typically looking at, like, activating him to figure out, like, exactly where I need to be with him. So it's been kind of weird, and I don't know if it's helping my positioning game or not. But I have a feeling when I go back to Death Clock, I'm not going to lose as many games on clock as I did before.
Yeah, I find that the transition back to Death Clock from the games are so different that I don't know if I translate the value at all into, like, a lot of people, their take up is, I play a lot faster on time turns, and then I take that in Death Clock. But the problem is, you construct your turn, you construct your list and your turn so differently that it's not generally applicable, but it kind of is, I guess. If your primary takeaway is just a sense of urgency all the time, then great. That's like probably the most valuable thing that the time-based turns can give you. Is if it gives you that last 8 minutes of your clock, sort of pressure in your head all the time, then you're clearly going to have a better play experience, I guess, and not run out of clock. But generally speaking, Death Clock gives you so many different advantages that if you don't take advantage of those, being able to, I mean, like, that's the other thing about time turns is the extension is, it really sucks to waste your extension on turn two. Like, just on something, usually you've feeded, you're kind of chowing into them or doing whatever you're doing, and then you have to, like, feet just to clean up your formation a little bit, and it's like, ugh. And then you're hoping, like, I probably killed enough stuff, though. The game's going to be so much faster. But that doesn't, you know, sometimes it's like you both have, you know, 20% less models, but the game's a lot more intense, and all you need more processing power. Like, you need that time later in the game a lot more critically with less models, you know?
Gotcha.
But a Death Clock, you can have that extension whenever you want. As long as you're kind of playing relatively close, you know, you can sort of, if you've got a tough assassination run, you could just literally sit there, grab a cappuccino, start writing stuff down on a notebook, you know, just do, and, you know, just a totally different game. And so as such, time turns, unless you're just like bonkers, you know, there's so much. I mean, honestly, you play Troll, so it's not as huge a deal anyways, but, you know, you don't. Unless you're basically like the Rain Man, you don't really even need to bother. Like, a standard Death Clock turn is like, can I assassinate their caster? I'm going to spend about 15 seconds just, and I've already probably been thinking about it on their turn, but I'm going to spend about 15 seconds assessing, like, here's the resource I can put on their caster, here's the resources, and then you start kind of like working your plan down until you get to your, like, whatever you're doing. I don't do that at all in time turns. I'm just like, they left a guy, I can probably scalp out Mulg. I'm just going to do that. You know, I'm going to scalp out this, like, thing that's kind of hanging out there a little bit, and then I'm just going to make the most minor attacks I could make and then move on. And then, yeah, I don't know.
Absolutely agreed.
Yeah.
So would you say in time turns, then, it's better to go, like... Would you say that in time turns that it feels like it's better to go with the assured play? Like,
yeah, always.
The conservative play than it is to, like, really, really bear down, math it out, and be like, yeah, okay, this looks all right. Like, it just, because it kind of feels okay.
Yeah.
Because that's also been something that, like, because that's kind of where, like, I was talking about the positioning with, like, a war wagon, right? Well, that's kind of where that's coming from, is like, conservative, and it doesn't sound conservatively because it sounds like I'm taking massive risk. But conservatively, I'm trying to make sure that my models can all do the jobs that I need them to do. So I'm trying, like, I don't want to hamper myself or to tie myself up and make myself burn resources and time to get models back in the game where they should be or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, even by not protecting a model, I'm playing conservatively in my mind. Does that make any sense?
Nope, not at all. At least not my Fenblades are an interesting, like, so say you got Fenblades in a battle engine. Honestly, I try to make a comp, like, because it's time turns, I try to complicate their turn, and Fenblades are a good unit to complicate their turn with. They can tax you if you're trying to make all your valuable attacks, you know, feeding and then, you know, mini feeding and then going in there with your extra speed and, like, go, you know, blah blah blah. They'll chew up your whole clock. But if you throw, like, half that unit in front of your battle engine, it's nothing for you on your turn to just run them out of the way. But it's a lot for them to chew through all the tough models, especially who are like, you know, immune to impact attacks and all the other, like they have these weird little bonus rules that make them complicated. Plus just tough, you know. Time turns, I think, screen, they help the screening, like certain unit types that aren't that popular in Death Clock become way more valuable in time turns, and a screening unit's one of those. So, like, I would absolutely screen them with three or four Fen Blades, and then I wouldn't worry about them being in my way, because I would just, it's time turns, who cares? Like, charge with three that can charge, run the rest out of the way, like, you know, and then get your battle engine out there. And then if they waste a lot of time trying to, like, oh, gosh, how do I get rid of these three stupid Fen Blades that are in the way, because I want to put this Slayer on there or whatever, you know. Then, you know, good on you. You're basically, you're killing them more than they're killing you, you know.
Also, gun lines are probably a really bad idea.
Yep.
You know, that unit of 10 sluggers, probably going to end badly for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I don't take Winter Guard sprays. I just don't even bother. I've been burnt on that way too many times. That's fool's gold.
And rockets are kind of, like, iffy if your opponent's playing infantry.
Yeah. The nice thing
when it scatters and clips three infantry, and it's dice minus 11, you have to roll on all three.
Yep.
If you can damage, you have to.
One thing I'm interested in finding out is in Death Clock, we haven't really been coming up on the 7-turn time limit, the 7-turn limit on SR-2017. But in time turns, in the old days, I've played 9 turns deep on time turn games. So, like, time turns could change that quite a bit.
I can tell you in the games that I've played on time turns, I've hit 7 turns routinely. Like, probably half of those games I've hit 7 turns on.
Hmm.
For no other reason than just it's two players, like, it's two players trying to get, like, because especially if you're out of practice on time turns, like, you'll end up having a turn end abruptly, and you're like, oh, well, that's it.
Yeah.
And then it'll go over to the other guy, and then he'll end up having the same thing happen. And then, like,
well, this leads,
of course, I would imagine.
This leads me to my next point, is that time turns already had a very caustically unfun play experience, in which was the, like, oh, dice down tiebreakers, yay. But now that's like, that is a sort of Damocles over your game that you have to be paying attention to. And, like, if you're, like, Scorn playing against a Menoth player, and it's basically just this miserable F-fest, you guys are probably going to 7 turns. Like, there's just two armies that, like, smash into each other, or trolls. You throw trolls into that mix. They could easily also, like, oh, this is going to 7 turns, so who's going to be in zones, and who's going to be, I don't even know what the tiebreakers currently are when you do dice down. Like, do you guys?
Control points, and then army points.
In zones? Do they have
remaining.
To be?
And then after that, you go to army points in zones, I believe.
Well, army points remaining is a big divider. Like, that essentially chops off the rest of them. Like, the ones in zones then probably won't, you know. It's very rare that we're like, we're both at 54 points.
It is defined fairly well in the SR packet. I don't remember what it is for this
point. Yeah, yeah. But exactly. But that's something that actually is a huge critical deal. Like, I haven't played time turns in so long that I just don't think about it. But I do recall that was a very important, like, obviously something that we'd have to bone up on if we're being all that serious. Because honestly, it's one of those, like, knowing half the battle, like, you will 1,000,000% win games by just, it's turn 5, I'm going to start turtling a little bit. You know, it's turn 5, I'm going to start turtling, I'm up one scenario point or whatever, you know. So either have scenario advantage and want to turtle, or you want to keep scenario parity and win on the next tiebreaker, which I think is where people will get a little bit ambushed, because that's where people, when you start counting model values, it's like, uh-oh. Yeah, things go weird.
Yeah, and I'm also kind of curious, like, how Doomshaper 3 specifically interacts with that, because Doomshaper 3 has a tendency to hold on to his army pretty well. So you can kill a couple of heavies and get up on points really quickly on your opponent, just because his stuff is so hard to bring down. So I'm kind of curious exactly how that's going to play out. And I'm only going to know the more games I play, which we're working on. Like, I'm organizing a big playtest day between the players here in Joplin and players in Springfield. I want to get some invites out to some guys in Springdale and some guys in Kansas City and have everybody come down to Changing Hands in Joplin. And just like shotgun out games all day. And I'm working out the details of that, but I'm hoping that like a big playtest session like that is going to get me, especially against more varied opponents, is going to get me a better understanding of exactly how Doomshaper 3 specifically plays into that. Cause I have a feeling that's actually going to be pretty important for him.
Well, you know, there's a community like an hour south of you with multiple tables that should be able to do that.
Yeah, I know. Like, I want to get people from Springdale to come up to Joplin. I think it'd be awesome if we could get some playtest players from Springfield and Casey and Springdale and Joplin and get everybody together and just shotgun out games all day, getting ready for War Machine weekend. Like, I think that would be awesome. And Joplin's in kind of a really good position for that because we're like halfway between everybody. Like, everybody has like a halfway drive to get to Joplin.
Not me.
Well, except you, Nigel. But you'll drive the 5 hours to come to Joplin just to be with me, though, right?
Mm. KC's a bit of a stretch.
The correct answer is yes, Nigel. I mean, it's only 5 hours from my house to Des Moines. Like, I've driven that several times.
That's true. Well, several isn't just once. No, wait, you didn't go. You weren't here when we all came here.
Excuse me, sir. Like, I went to Crump's wedding and then both mom cons, and then I went up one other time
for
something.
Those don't count. You didn't come up for the me and Brent Simon Keith Invitational where we just practiced all weekend.
No, I didn't get to come up with that because somebody let me know the week of, and I was like, a little hard to get time off for that one.
Mm-hmm.
You had exactly 30 more minutes heads up than I did.
I know. I can't blame you, but I want to blame you. So that doesn't change it now, does it?
Right.
Exactly.
Does that cover time turns and tournament practice for you, Scott?
Yeah, I think it does. Like, I'm going to keep like updating kind of how things go along. I really want to make – this will be the first LCQ I've ever played in.
They're fun. They look bad, but they look intensive, but they're fun.
I can say this, is that the LCQ for you, I mean, well, again, I don't know. Like, I feel like you beat yourself up a lot on just everything that's happening in a game, you know, if it's going negative for you.
Yep.
I think in a time turn environment at the LCQ, you're gonna find that it's kind of hilarious how often you're going to end. You're going to clock yourself, not get to finish a few things. You might not even activate your Creel Stone or something stupid, and you're going to be like, oh, my God, Jesus. And you're going to just, like, totally flagellate yourself. And then they're going to clock themselves. They're like, you know, players are stupid, kind of like boxers. And if they feel you're wobbly on your feet, sometimes they'll go for blood. Like, this happens literally all the time. I can't tell you how many times I've seen this in a game where, you know, you get clocked. You didn't get to finish your turn. They get so excited that they, like, flip their crap and return the favor in a more apocalyptic way, like, where it's like, okay, well, I've got this, like, easy trample to your caster, three things, or, you know, like, I would bet you could accidentally completely hee-haw your way through the first four rounds. Like, you should be an easy 3-0 just because, like, everybody's nervous. Like, round one, everybody's nervous and crappy. And you're just going to start surviving games where you've been playing poorly for a round or two or making mistakes, and it's not critical. You just start being like, oh, geez, you know, you're less hard on yourself because you'll find that most players aren't good enough to play perfect when you're playing badly. They're going to reciprocate the, you know, mistakes.
Okay.
In Death Clock, it's like, oh, I just got my caster killed, and then your caster dies.
I'd also say even more so than Death Clock, make sure you have everything you can to shave time off. Make sure you've got your widgets and your sticks and your everything out and ready to go the moment your clock starts.
And you know what? That is a great, great thought. That's an awesome thought, Brent. Because from what I understand, there's a couple companies that make measuring sticks that are larger than 10 inches.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would like to procure measuring sticks that are larger than 10 inches.
Is that a true thing?
That is a true thing. As we were podcasting, I had to step away for a second to take some hot off the press, 11 through 14s.
Nice. So are those going to be available to everybody through the Muzon store?
Yeah, absolutely. They're going to the WTC as of this week, and then we will try to release them this week. By the end of the week, they should be on the store as well.
Nice. And
one thing I would like to point out before anyone says, why would I need a measuring stick longer than 10 inches when I can put two together? One, it saves you time and gives you more accuracy. And two, if I want to put things – if I didn't want to use a stick and I want to try to squeeze two together, I already have a tape measure. But those things are amazing for really long threat ranges, and there's a lot of 12- and 13-inch threats in the game right now.
Yeah. I've been watching a lot of live streaming. There's a lot going on. What is it, Attack X? I was watching Attack X, and you saw a lot of people would lay a 14 down and then just leave it out for the entire turn. Like, they wanted to, like, your threat's 13 inches. I'm going to be 14 away or whatever it is, you know. And then you would just see, they would just use it to demarcate their safe area, not so much their own threat ranges, just.
And I know the Canadians have been making those 11 to 14s for a while, but especially with the WTC coming up this weekend, I wanted to make sure I gave my money to an American company.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very nice of you.
I'm not going to lie. Whenever I go to a tournament or an event, I'm a walking billboard for Muse anyway.
Have you seen
my little trinkets bag? Like, have you seen the junk I carry with me, Nigel?
No, but I've seen you on the internet. You're usually a pretty good musy.
So, yes, I
and
use...
the musy.
Mm-hmm.
I use everything Muse. So, yeah, I want to buy, like, I buy that stuff from Muse for a reason.
This also, I sort of, for a product that we have to sort of blame Brent for, because, you know, honestly, I would have stopped at the 10 and then been happy and just never going back. Like, you know, we were at Office Max the other day, and one of my employees was with me. We were trying to ship a product or whatever, and we walked past a yardstick, a 36-inch ruler, and he's like, look, the next token, you know, the next template. And I was like, just get out of here. You're like, yeah, it's sort of a... But there's a need for it. Like, I get a little bit inundated with requests for them. So, not only has Brent Simon kind of been talking about, I have to say, like, your first and last name. Not only has Brent been bringing it up, and then Scott, and then Shirley and stuff, but the East Coast guys, Fredrickson and those guys, have also been kind of like pegging me for them, and then. Even some Canadians who are like, we just want like double-sided gloss stuff. Like, we don't want the like laser etched whatever. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of players want them. There's a lot of players like Nick, who's sort of a simpler guy, you know, like, arr, I'm curmudgeon-y and I like, it's gone too far, but I don't know. It's like, don't buy them, I guess.
That's the beautiful thing about it too, is that, my local store said, why would you need a move stick? I've got a tape measure. And that lasted until literally the first time they used one of them and went,
yep.
Huh. I need a set of those.
Yeah. And they're also just like 1-inch reach gauges. Nah, and no. Yeah. I need to make one. I didn't do it on the Sawbone. I didn't do it on the set that we're making, but I kind of wanted to, on one of them, make a Sawbones, like the little like 1-inch.
Yeah. The little 1-inch, overtake stuff on the side in the back of the Oklahoma Keys is really nice to do that. I don't know if it would break on the larger, longer sticks, but thankfully I don't have to worry about QCing that type of stuff.
Yeah, that's all Nigel's world. We'll let him deal with that. On that note, though, while we are talking, you made the comment, I don't necessarily know if I would run a gun line in time turns.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of made me rethink Grim 2 a little bit on time turns. I think he's wonderful in Death Clock, where I have the time to actually like execute a master plan, but I'm a little worried about him on time.
I'm back.
And perhaps I won't run a Death Clock in time turns as a misnomer. I will run specific types of gun lines in time turns. CRAs are really good. High quality single target shots or high quality AOEs, but a few of them, bombers, for instance, Behemoth, really, really good. Redeemer spam, probably not going to work as well as you think. So
you think like double war wagon, like double bombers, probably okay.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. Double pygmy bushwhackers, double scatter gunners, probably not going to be as fun as
probably
you think.
Probably not. Yeah, probably not.
I'm not certain if you would play that to begin with, though.
So, Nigel.
It's troll models. Most of them just die, and the other ones just make my life miserable.
Hmm. What's that, Scott?
Well, that's what we... So, I've been after you for this for a while. And so, this year, since I'm entering my first ever Last Chance qualifier... Can I get some custom measuring sticks, not the extended size, just the base size, that have the Muse logo and sea bass? It's what I'm after. You got to hook me up. We'll talk about it later.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to blow you up over online, though.
Yeah.
Because I want everybody to know how much this means to me.
I think we'll be able to work something out.
I think you should not deliver them though until round three of the LCQ, because if he doesn't show up for rounds one and two, he won't be able to get them.
Hmm.
Come on, Brent. Are you serious?
I'm going to just do this. I'm going to hand them to whoever's judging the event, Travis Marg or whatever. I'm just going to give them to Travis, and I'll be like, if Scott Taylor is here round one, give them to him. And if he's not, give them to Brent Simon. And then that'll be... And I'll let
give him one per round. Give him the 4-inch first. I mean, he doesn't get a single stick that's useful until round four when he gets the 7-inch one.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, Brent, you're on food duty for LCQ players, right? Me and Nigel?
I can make sure that happens. Chris and Dion, their wives are both coming, and I'm trying to talk mine into it. I think the plan for them is to sit together with a case of wine and make fun of all the nerds. But
That's not going to be hard.
Yeah, easy pickings.
Many of them, all of them, I'm certain would be glad to go run food for to get food for us, since there's a taco place right around the corner.
Oh, Fuzzy's Tacos, man, that place is good.
Yes, indeed.
So we've covered time turns, new product, and the unfortunate return of trolls.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else we missed there, Nigel?
No, we can call it a quickie.
Wasn't going to call it that, but sure. Yeah. I had a WTC question for you, actually.
Hmm.
I thought I saw a rumor that John may be on a team this year.
Well, the Irish are heavily recruiting him, and who knows? Josh might, or, you know, John might, if you stroke him hard enough, he'll do basically anything. They're stroking pretty hard.
If this happens,
mm-hmm.
would John be traveling over international waters to fight for another country?
Yeah. And it's not France? I agree. It's a little bit of a betrayal.
He's literally a privateer, though. He gets all the pirate jokes ever.
That's true.
That's so amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, everybody who's listening, hit me up. I'm Scott Taylor on Facebook. I'm in Carl Junction, Missouri, so you can't miss me. I have the L2 Wargame logo as my profile picture. Send me your awesome, awesome pirate jokes. Send them all to me. But they have to be good ones. They can't be the crap ones that we've already heard 1,000 times that Josh has told John 17 times.
And don't just send the good ones. Send the ones that are terrible that we haven't heard.
Yeah.
The ones that make everybody cry.
Yeah. You absolutely.
Here's how I can tell John is betraying both his adopted country and his birth country on this one.
Mm. Yeah, also... Yeah,
absolutely.
Also, if you're watching the stream and Team Ireland happens to be on camera, I would love to be in the chat. On the Twitch chat, it would be amazing.
Speaking of which, Nigel, we need to figure out a time when we're going to get up and then... How do you want to watch the WTC together?
I think this is going to be the easiest thing to plan in the world, because we're just going to be playing Destiny, and then we're going to, like, at 4 o'clock, hey, let's pause Destiny. Like, let's just be red-eyed paused, and we'll just go. But no, yeah, we'll take, like, a two-hour nap or something. But, yeah, it's, like, 4 in the morning or something ungodly that it starts, but it is pretty awesome.
I just didn't know if you wanted to, like, set up, like, a Skype chat, or if you wanted to actually be on voice, or if we wanted to... Well, you know what, though? We could all get in the PlayStation room and then just watch it over Twitch.
That's true. Yeah. Or a Skype chat. We always Skype with Tom Guan, but he's actually playing again this year, so we probably won't be able to. But, yeah, we'll definitely get something arranged, because it's pretty enjoyable. It's pretty fun to, like, go through and talk with people about other people's games, you know? It makes the experience pretty high quality.
Oh, yeah. No, it's going to be great. It'll be great. It'll be almost as good as watching it in a bar drinking beer.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's a wrap.
That is a wrap. All right, guys. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Mise en Minis. I'm Nigel.
Brent.
Seabass.
Have a good one. I do the Xenophil highlighting with just a black can of primer and then a white can of primer, and then I just, like, I don't put that much into it. But then with the airbrush, I'd use thin layers, and I kind of build up, so I kind of re-Xenophil highlight with actual paint.
Yeah, it looks really good. Good
job. Thank you. Yeah, I want to murder myself for once again taking out a commission. It's like, why am I an idiot? I swear I'd never do it.
Jay, and he offered you lots and lots and lots of stuff.
Of J-Bucks, yeah. It's true, and I'm a man of many needs, like 10 Marauders and 10 Mad Dogs and 10, you know, 10 things.
You're subsidizing the team for...
Yeah, for the ATC. 50
Marauders, right?
Yep, 50 Marauders. I've been seeing a lot more Marauder hate on the internet lately. Like, the Marauder made the top two, like, it made the top 10 Warcasters in Kador list. It was number 2.
I can see that.
Yeah. And I was like, what? And then, yeah, they literally on the next 8, they proceeded to bitch about Marauders in every caster description. It's like, what is happening?
Yeah, I really like that, Nigel. It's looking good.
Thanks. I, for one, think Marauders are fair and balanced.
No.
I think if you don't nerf them, you buff Mad Dogs. You get them back down to 7 points, and then we're good. Or 8 points, maybe. Or buy two, get one free. Some sort of Mad Dog discount. Maybe buy 4, get one free. I don't know. Something.
Yeah, I don't know. I would like to see something happen to him just so they're playable.
Yeah. I was contemplating a... I was contemplating a Butcher 1 list, like a Mad Dog spam Butcher 1 list. I was like, this could be legit, actually, because he's got full throttle, and then they have extra threat range or whatever, and he has Fury at his feet, so he has the ability to, like, crank him up. But then I'm just like, he just run 10 Marauders. It's so much better.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. I think the problem with Kador is that the Marauder's too good.
No.
And the Juggernaut is too good.
Agree to disagree.
But I don't think they're too good in opposition to everything. I don't think they themselves are too good and break the game. I think the problem is that as long as they are as efficacious as they are, those are the only two jacks that are going to show up in Kador. Mm-hmm. With the exception of the random Kodiak every now and then. Typically pair of Kodiaks, but I don't know. It's tough to say.
That's how the points work out on that.
Tough to say. Yeah.
And the occasional Destroyer.
See, I don't know. I haven't seen anyone else play them.
Oh, I love them.
But that doesn't mean anything. That just means that I haven't seen it.
Destroyers are perfect because you have so many Warcaster 28 battle group points, and it's just 2 Destroyers, and then you're done. And then for guys like Vlad 1, that's perfect. And Sorcha 1 can't
Eris
take...
2.
Yeah, Eris 2. Sorcha 1 can't take him. Take Behemoth in Winterguard spam if she wants to do it that way.
Or you can just take one Behemoth.
Yeah, and go to Jaws. Well, I mean, that's true.
Yeah, but the problem is you have to go to Jaws to do that. And that's not in and of itself a bad thing. It just means that you give up. Like Sorcha really loves them Winter Guard. Like, I don't know if she wants to give them up. Man.
Yeah. I agree.
Can't wait to get working on this press game model.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. That's a cool gift.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. Thanks, Brent.
You're welcome.
Well, that was Brent.
That was Brent.
Well, that's awesome.
It was, I found it a really righteous thing, and Scott got screwed, so I figured I could fix that.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, you know, Scott did a ton of work for me, so.
Colin had that happen with Lance. Lance was at a garage sale, and they had these 2 Dragon Ball Z board games, and he's like, I'll get these for Colin. It's pretty cool when you can, like, find those cool things for friends.
Yeah.
I just can't wait to get started on them. I'm going to have to find lists I can put Ogryn Bokurs in.
By the time you get done, all of them.
Fair.
I'm not trying to be mean. I mean, I'm pretty sure by the end of next month, you'll be able to take a minion or Mark Solo and basically everything. And he works for everybody with conversions now.
Yep. He actually has a place in Kador. I ran him before themes became a thing in Kador. Like, he actually had a place there. I don't know if he'll have a place again, but I don't know. It'll be interesting. If nothing else, I'll put him on the table just to have fun with him.
Like, you need to hit up, Chris Collins. He's starting Death Guard for 40K. And he's doing Terminators, I think. And then you get one of those Nurgle Death Guard masks for the Terminator. So you can do a head swap. So you've got the little whole Bane mask going on.
Oh, I'm going to kill you, Dion Francis.
I mean, there's so many other jokes we could have made.
Oh, I know. I know. I'm thankful it ended there.
I think tonight we need just a general call to the audience to see, get people lined up to just smack you upside the back of the head.
Me?
Yes.
What the hell for?
Eat your crackers.
Oh, funny.
Were you guys at a tournament again this weekend?
No.
One of us was.
No. Yeah. I made some mistakes over the weekend, and they were really big mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Is that what was going on yesterday? A little bit of hangover from the...
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't hangover. It was just...
Well, just like health hangover.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah. It wasn't good. It wasn't good at all.
Yeah, well, don't beat yourself up.
No, I don't want him to beat himself up. I want people to beat him up.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was really funny. Last year at War Machine Weekend, I actually had a couple of people walk up to me and be like, yeah, it's too bad I threw away the box for my hell mouth. Otherwise, I would have just handed it to you. Like, they were going to just set it on the table I was playing at, because Brent made hell mouth earrings, and there was this video that circulated on the Blight Makes Right, right? Yeah.
Also on the Legion Forums.
On the Legion Forums. So there was this video of me getting trolled, basically, with these hell mouth earrings. I was just ready to kill Brent. And so when I went to War Machine Weekend, I actually had people come up to me and be like, yeah, I was just going to save my box and like just put it on the table you're playing at and walk away. But unfortunately, I threw the box away. And so this year, I have a feeling I'll be like, yeah, I'll play in Iron Arena, sure. And then like I'll sit down to play in Iron Arena and people are just going to start walking by and putting crackers on the table or some shit.
Mm. Yeah, but then you'll eat them and you'll be good. And orange juice. Put crackers and orange juice.
Actually, the orange juice may be too much.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I know, right? Oh, boy. Okay, I am situated. So what are we talking about tonight anyway?
We can talk WTC shenanigans, the tournament 2 weeks ago, the tournament this weekend, that the Crackergate, and then we could talk about
I actually wanted to propose a topic and wanted to get you guys' input. So with the last chance qualifier rolling around, time turns becomes a thing again, right?
Uh-huh.
And so I've been playing the last several games on time turns to try and get myself like cracked into that whip. Mm-hmm. And I struggle with clock anyway. Like I legitimately just struggle with clock like no tomorrow. So I didn't know if we had the material tonight, then don't worry about it. But if we didn't, or if you guys wanted to engage in that, that would be an interesting topic, I think.
Mm-hmm. Just time turn preparation.
Yeah. Like, how do you prepare yourself to play on time turns? How do you play on time turns efficiently? What are things to watch out for? And what are things to just kind of let go and be like, well, it is what it is.
All right, that's, we can talk about it.
Yeah.
LCQ prep. Works. I don't know if I need people getting prepared for the LCQ. They're going to get in my way.
Oh,
only nice. Because you skipped like every qualifier you could make.
I know. It's true. I went to that one in St. Louis.
You went to recruits.
I did not go to recruits.
I thought. No, you didn't go to recruits. You went to St. Louis? You went to Gateway?
I went to Gateway. I went to the homecoming weekend or whatever. So is that not a qualifier?
That's Springfield. That's Springfield.
Oh, whatever. Same place.
No, not the same place.
Agree or disagree?
I mean, he's from Omaha. He got it in the same state on the third try.
Omaha? You mean Des Moines?
No, it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm not gonna. Yeah,
they're 2 hours apart.
Yeah,
it's close enough.
Like, I'm not gonna split hairs exactly.
All right.
So we got time turns. I don't know. I'm like a little bit lost on CID. I'm actually blissfully ignorant of like crap that's going on. I know that Cray and all that stuff actually hit War Room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man, I'm so glad that.
As far as what's going on in CID right now, like there's nothing. I kind of just don't even want to ever talk about CID just because like there's nothing.
No, I totally agree. That's why I'm so happy that I'm like totally, I haven't thought about CID in like 3 weeks. I'm totally like, other than Colin today was like, it hit War Room. And I was like, oh, sweet. Are you going to start playing? He's like, nope. I was like, okay, well, I guess just check the War Room for no reason, I guess. But, it's cool to see the things coming online, but it also sucks because, like, they spend so much time doing spoilers and social media crap, and then it's like, when's the Shock Trooper theme coming on? And it's not even on yet, but, like, we know, yeah. I guess.
And the next theme is already confirmed to be Blind Water, so.
Yeah, boo. You talking
Adam
about the.
That right?
He will actually, since he's still sore, bitter about the Scorn theme.
So this is episode 326.
326.
Wow.
Yeah, it just chugs. It just chugs and chugs.
It does. I don't know how you guys have done this for 326 episodes. It's amazing.
Yeah, I've only done it for, I don't know. I want to say that they were in the 200s when I got on. I don't know.
Yeah, it was earlier than that. Because you were there for episode 64. You were there for the Do a Barrel Roll, Fox.
Hmm. God, I have like the worst memory. Know.
I did get a compliment on the, I don't know if it's a compliment or not. It kind of freaked me out a little bit, but on the Muse forums, someone had made the mention. They're like, Scott, you are the perfect straight man for the podcast. And I was like, I have no idea what a straight man is other than the obvious reference to, you know, lifestyle preference.
I mean, John used to be, but then he just got too bitter, I think.
Hashtag menoth problems.
Right?
Yeah. No, you're totally right. So then you had to learn what a straight man was?
Yeah, then I had to learn that a straight man is basically the guy that doesn't laugh at the jokes because he doesn't know that they're jokes.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not so much that. It's like, the guy who makes the jokes pay off because he's serious and he has to deal with a guy who's not serious or whatever.
Right. So apparently that is something I do exceptionally well.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, it's a trait that's really good to have. Lance in Muzan Miami was kind of the straight guy, and he was hilarious at it. And that's the other thing, too, is like a good straight guy, a good straight man, is usually pretty hilarious in their own right. Like they have sort of unintentional comedic timing.
I don't think I have that.
I don't know. I've got some scenario zones that say otherwise.
All right.
Oh God, no.
So one of my employees, by the way, posted on Facebook today, name white people cook better. The best response was meth.
I mean, we made an entire TV show about it. It was a really good TV show, so I guess like there's probably some truth in that somewhere.
Nigel, if you haven't checked out the Signar forums, Voltaic Vixen looks a lot better when you get away from the stock model, stock paint job.
Yeah, are you talking about your blueberry one?
Also, Nick posted one where he swapped the top of the staff with a, so it doesn't look all American. He still painted it as though it was wearing go-go boots and Daisy Dukes, but yeah. I didn't even realize it was supposed to be human until they showed the official paint job. Okay, I looked at that and I went, Doug Hamill did an amazing sculpt. This thing is beautiful. His concept art sucks, but this sculpt is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like he didn't. It was like the descriptions of Malifaux, the best sculptors ever for the worst concept art.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, are we ready to start recording?
We are. I'll start the old intro.
All right.
Hello.
I'll get the musing and amusing part.
Okay.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.